You first.
My name is Frank Curry. My age is 87. Today's date, December 18th, 2010. Location, Waco, Texas. That, I don't know what.
Relationship to partner?
Yeah.
Former service.
Former service.
Yeah.
Navy. Amen. I want to be sure about it. Go ahead.
I am Roland B. Duty. I am 65 years old. Today is December the 18th, 2010. We are in Waco, Texas. And I am a former infantry paratrooper. So, Mr. Curry, where were you born?
I was born right here in Waco, Texas, August 10, 1923. Born and raised in Waco. Went through school in Waco. I went to Brook Avenue Elementary, West Junior High School, and Waco High School.
What did your parents do for a living?
My mother was divorced from my father. They separated when my brother and I was either 4 and 5 or 5 and 6, one of those deals. My brother was 16 months younger than me. So she was a single mother trying to raise 2 boys. And that's a hard job for a woman to do.
Where'd she work?
She didn't. Anywhere she could get a job. There was no work back there then.
Yeah.
When I got out of high school, I went looking for a job, couldn't find it. Of course, we went in a national emergency, I think, in October, November 1940. And Wood Brothers down there was building army cots for the army because they mobilized the National Guard and the Reserve, I think. Took them down to Brownwood or somewhere. I went down there and they were building army cots. A future brother-in-law of mine went with me. We went down there, tried to get a job. They would hire him. He was bigger than me. Said I was too small. They were building army cots. I ain't never figured out yet how you get too small to build an army cot. So I went home, told Mama, I'm joining the Navy. She said, and I said, I've done talked to the chief down there, and you have to sign the papers because I'm only 17. She said, I won't sign them. I said, if you don't sign the papers for me, Mama, I'm go downtown and get a hobo to sign them. Finally convinced her. So I joined what they call back there then, a minority cruise. You're under 18, over 17. But it's a complete enlistment that you have to complete. And it was at that time the only time in the Navy you could ever get a hash mark that was less than 4 years. So I went in Uncle Sam's Navy.
Uh-huh. That gave you a steady line of employment. You graduated with 11 grades?
Yeah. At September 1940, when we started back to high school, instead of going from the 10th to the 11th, they put the 12th grade in your public school system, and I believe they started at junior high, and everybody just advanced a year, although starting a school, and we're already in elementary, I think, had a complete 12.
Yeah.
I'm not for sure, but I think that's the way it was. I went from a 10th to the 12th instead of the 10th to the 11th. So I'd flunked English, and they wanted me to go to summer school. And that's when I went to looking for the job and couldn't find it, so I joined the Navy. But I worked that out after I got in the Navy. But that was it. They sent me to Dallas and passed the physical. Sent me to San Diego.
Did you ride a train or a bus?
Train.
To San Diego?
Yeah.
Took about 46 hours.
Oh, yeah, it takes a long time. Uh-huh. We left, the sun was shining big and bright in Dallas, Texas. We got on that train, and when we got to Amarillo, there was snow and ice on the ground. Stayed that away till we got to Bakersfield, California, and then the sunshine come back. So We went to the boot camp, didn't have quite enough boys for our former unit yet, so most of us that went in was from Texas and Oklahoma. And I went in with a young man from Fort Worth named Angelo Arcevar, and it was about a week or two before we got enough to make our company to get that many in there.
What'd you do in that week?
And the guy became my GI, they had recalled a bunch of retreads, retirees, to be recruit DIs. So he took us around to the barracks, and we learned how to make hammocks and hammock lashings. Some of them others never got that. I got one hanging up in the corner of my room in the living room, and I brought back just the lashing alone for the hammock. But I couldn't make it now if I wanted to. Just all that stuff we made for our boats and pipes, and I made things, frames for pictures. I can't do that no more, but you could do it good back here.
May you touch your seamanship.
I learned that after I got aboard ship in the Navy.
So what was, you had a pretty abrupt introduction to the military.
Oh, yeah.
Civilian life, you know, and the nice instructor spoke to you in a motherly fashion.
Yeah.
Something about move a little quicker.
Well, when we found out we got our boot leave, and when we come back, why, he put a list of ships up there on a bulletin board and said, you boys pick out ships you would like to go aboard. Well, we looked up there and had two battleships up there, Texas and Tennessee. We said, we'd take Texas. He said, that one's up there by mistake. That's an East Coast battleship. T for Texas, we took Tennessee. And we were the only two recruits on the Tennessee, to my knowledge, when the 7th took place. The West Virginia next to us didn't even have a recruit. They had several on there. Their 4-year enlistment was up, and they were waiting to come back to the States to get paid off and get out. And a lot of them stayed on it. They never survived. You know, we lost a lot of them.
So you were assigned a battleship after learning something about military discipline and all the stuff that goes with it.
Yeah, we went through a big boot camp. And we hated it at first, but you learned to accept it.
But you got 3 squares a day at least.
Yes, sir, and that's what I was looking for.
Yeah.
3 squares a day and a place to sleep, a dollar and a half or two a month. Starting salary was $21 a month. And about $4 and something of it went for insurance and stuff in the Navy. And then we made out an allotment for my mama because she wasn't working. I gave her a $9 allotment. So that took care of about $13, $14 of it. So you ain't got much left out of 21, and that covers a whole month.
Mm-hmm.
But things were cheap back there then. Oh. You could get 25 cents and get a dinner, a good meal for 25 cents.
Go to the movie?
Oh, yeah, you can get a hot dog in the movie, go to the movie. And we did that. We did a lot of it.
Well, that was you didn't have any other entertainment other than the radio.
And I went aboard the battleship in August, and two dates always ring a bell. Either my birthday, which was the 10th of August, or the 17th. And I think it was right after my birthday. I believe I went on the 17th, because also in the same month, we headed for Pearl Harbor for the first time. I'd never even heard of it. I didn't even know what it was. And we ain't out over 2 or 3 days, and we go through what's called a 90-knot gale, wind and water coming at you at over 100 miles an hour. We had seaplanes on them two catapults, one on each catapult. Washed the planes off, took the dogs on our hatches, big old dogs, tightened them down with, twisted them just like pretzels. We had 2 foot of water on our main deck. We set water tight, got pumps going, went up and put tarps on the hatches, lashed them all down. And when we got to Pearl, here come the yard workers, because they had a world of ships to start repairing on all of us. And I think they were still doing some repair work on one of the cruisers the day of the attack, still hadn't finished. Because it got underway eventually, and the yard workers was on it. And they brought them back to the States, and they thought they'd get to stay, but they turned around and sent them back right where they come from.
They were very important.
But, man, they tore up the fleet pretty good.
So you you actually went through a stressful situation, to say the least, just getting to Pearl Harbor.
Oh, yeah, man. I told Angela, I went in with, I said, boy, we made a big mistake getting in this Navy. And then here comes December 7th, Angela, we done made two big mistakes.
So what were you doing on, you had normal Sunday morning routine.
I was mess cooking.
You were downstairs?
Mess cooking. I became a mess cook. We eat family style.
Uh-huh.
We had tables we swung on the overhead, break them down, put them up three times a day, had large white plates, big large white bowls, big large white cups with no handles. And we'd get serve a mess. Well, at the day of the attack, Sunday, most of them won't even get up and eat chow. But anyway, we got through, and I got through with my mess. I'm cleaning up all the dishes, and you wash them in salt water. Use salt water soap, put them in the racks, take them back to the scullery, which is a sterilization process that they'll run them through after
steam.
You put them up there. And they run them through there. And that's how they sterilize all of them. And you, every time you did your mess, you had to go through, watch all your dishes, be sure no cracks was in them. If you found a crack, it was thrown away and a new one replaced it. Because in them cracks, you can get diseases in.
Yeah.
So they took no chance. They were strict on that. You had to watch it real close. And that's the morning the attack started. I just set my rack up there. And the Marine Division aboard ship was right across the passageway from the scullery. It was the 8th Division on our ships. They manned all those 5-inch 51 casemate guns that used to be on the outside of them old battle wagons. And as I set my rack up, we hear this big blast and a big heavyweight wrestler on our ship. And he turned out to be a Waco boy, come running through the passageway, knocking everybody out of his way, and he was moving in a hurry. I don't know where he's going, but he was getting there. Instantaneously, another blast. We hear a chief petty officer tell you had it, and he come through there. And he'd been in the Asiatic fleet, been in the Navy several years, served over there, knew all their countries, their flags. He hollering something about a meatball. I thought he was talking about something to eat. But we went to general quarters. General quarters went immediately. So by then, my battle station, I'm in the 2nd Division, so we manned number 2 14-inch gun turret. And my battleship stationed in the turret was lower ammunition handling room. Go right to the bottom of the turret, and then when you get in there, there's a magazine that goes between both of your turrets. And when you get in the bottom of them, you open up a hatch. Some of your men go in there, they'll open up the canisters, put bags of powder in a scuttle, scut it through the hatch, you take it out, go put it in yours, send it up to your gun pit. And that's the magazine.
It's powdered bags of powder.
It's two bags of powder. Got mostly 99% pellets. Looked like a 30 caliber shell cut off. And when they do that, what you are concerned with is a red end, as we call it. That's black powder, which all of us know you cannot put that out. You know, you get black powder on you if it's burning on your hand. Try to wipe it off, and you just got it on the other hand. It has to burn itself out, and you can't put it out. Well, we got that. We were instantaneously right there. We was down there, 10, maybe 9 or 10 minutes, and we get a great big hit on the top of our turret. We didn't know what it was. Shook tremendously. We took a 1,760-pound bomb, but instead of penetrating the turret, and if it had, I wouldn't be here talking to you. It hit a glancing blow, hit our middle gun, and the flak off of it killed a captain on the West Virginia next to us, blew him almost half in two. Well, general quarters seats, they passed the word on the bullhorn up there, secure from all 14-inch gun turrets. Well, you couldn't fire the 5-inch or the 14s. So we come out of the two top turrets. As we was coming out of the overhang, I saw the first of the two most god-awful sights I witnessed that day. I looked this direction over the bow of the West Virginia. There's the Oklahoma already on her side, capsized. Men all over in the water. We going aft. Our chief warrant officer, Boatswain Atkins, was motioning for us out of the two forward turrets, come aft. He's going to tell us what he wants us to do, which eventually sent us over to help the boys on the West Virginia. As we are going aft, all of us waiting for these orders, that's when the bomb come down that hit the Arizona. All of us was looking direct at that bomb. It come just forward of number two turret on the starboard side and aft of number one. And when it hit that magazine, that ship come 12 to 15 foot in the air, broke in two, and settled back down. And as I tell all them school kids, if you'd have had a bag of popcorn and you'd have went out here in a breeze and threw it up in the air, that was bodies that went out all over that harbor. That harbor was loaded with bodies. All those that could started picking them up as soon as they could. We had the hospital ship Solus in the harbor at that time, and they started their motor launches getting out picking up bodies. And some of the other ships that could get a motor launch of any kind into the water were all doing the same thing. Rest of us is manning what guns you could man. Well, we couldn't fire nothing but our 3-inch 23s, and they were on the starboard side, and we couldn't really use them because they were coming in from the port side when they was coming on them and diving us. So we got up there, and Boatswain Atkins said, you boys go on to Tennessee. Go on to West Virginia. Listen to the officers. Let them tell you what they want you to do. Do no more or less than what they ask you to do and tell you to do. Well, as he's telling us orders to go over there, well, here they dropping some more torpedoes on the West Virginia. They was going in right over. As we get over there, when the Arizona blew, she caught our fantail on fire, caught the West Virginia on fire, and we had portholes in our old ships. Our new ones, I don't think, had them. We looked through the quarterdeck area on the main deck, and it was a roaring inferno, and there was a chief petty officer. You could tell by his uniform, he's trapped in there by himself. He's trying. He got one arm out of porthole and his head, and he boatswain already sent us on to West Virginia. And after we get aboard, we hear the boatswain holler, somebody take that man out of his misery. We didn't see who did, don't want to know who did. But to this day, I've always told the school kids, I don't think it could have been a teenage kid that took him out, because I don't think we were mature enough in age to understand fully what Boatswain Atkins was asking us to do. Nowadays, yeah, I could have took him out, because I fully, you ain't going to let the man burn alive. That's what he's trying to do.
Yeah.
And somebody did. And like I say, we don't know, didn't see, don't want to. So we stayed on the West Virginia for a good while. The officer sent us, said, go below decks. Get down as far as you can go. If you hear any crickling and crackling, come topside immediately. We may be capsizing. You're already listening pretty good, but they're flooding the starboard side. So she'll settle down next to us as opposed to capsizing like the Oklahoma. We go down, we bang on the hatches, and they always told us, wait for a response. If you don't get a response, do not undog the hatches. Leave them that way. We went as far as we could go, and there was three or four more torpedoes hit the ship after we got on it. I think she took 9 torpedoes that day. We started fighting fires, and we went to fighting fires on it. We had fires going around the quarterdeck area. They was taking torpedoes forward, and they had some down there, but they had a lot of men trying to fight them. We did everything they asked us to do. And we come up our topside, and we seen this man, and when she started listing, to start with, part of that ship come up out of the water so far, you know, before she settled down. And it had turned out when they raised the ship a year later, 3 men were trapped down there. And they would hang on them pipes and on them side of the hull, because that part of the hull's out of the water and you can hear it because it's just above the armor belt that all of us had around our ships. See? If you have a 14-inch gun, you got 14-inch armor around your ship. 16, 16. You have to penetrate 16 or 14 inches to get you. But when that part comes up out of the water there above the armor belt, you could hear them banging. And we listened to that. And if we had a working party in that area after that, we'd put cotton in our ears so we couldn't listen to them poor souls trapped below decks. We didn't have earplugs. We didn't have ear muffs of any kind. We didn't have none of that stuff back there then. So we stayed over there, and we fought and fought. And then they come on, we come back. They call us back to the ship for a while, some of us. Then we went back. We told we want to help them get in the water, help them rescue these boys. Well, one come up as we was going on the Weaver. He'd get off, have a nickname for the West Virginia. We going to get in the barges, help them go pick bodies up out of the water. One of them come up. He said the first one he approached a young man in the water. And as he approached him, the young man severely burned and everything. He's telling me, do not touch me. He said, I got to touch you. I got to get you medical help. And it's hard. When he reached out to help the boy in, grabbed him right underneath his forearm right here, what he grabbed a hold of in his hand, come right off in his hand, just like that boy had been cooked on a stove. And that's what you had to do. You throw up your gut. Later on, we out there trying to help them. And we get the same thing. You wouldn't believe it if you were not there on that day at ground zero. There's absolutely no words on earth that can describe it. That I can tell you. And if you were there, none necessary. We did everything. The Solus motor launch come. That was a miracle that happened. There's a young man by the name of Robinson. He's on the Oklahoma when she capsized. He'd been in the Navy a good while. He was smart enough. He memorized all the frames in your ship. They're numbered from one aft, and they get all those numbers, and they put them down, and he was trapped in the ship fitter shop. And it's total blackness. You know, you put your finger on the eyeball, you cannot see it below decks when them lights are out. And he's trapped with another young man. And he said he told that young man, we had frame so-and-so. If I can hold my breath long enough to go to frame number this and come back here, then you and I can go all the way and get to the lifeline, give ourselves a shove. He did what he said and come back. But the young man was hysterical and wouldn't do it. So he went. And as he hit that lifeline, give himself a shove, come to the top of the water, bleeding out of eyes, ears, nose, and mouth, there's a Solus motor launch coming by. Picked him up and put him in that launch. Eventually brought him over to our ship. And that's how he saved his life. And several of them still trapped in the Oklahoma. They cut some out. They'd been in there, I believe, 37 and a half hours. And they got them out. They worked all night, all day, cutting them men out of that hull of that Oklahoma. And then we went around the water, trying to get some more, see what we could find. And we were on the third day. You got, the Arizona was a roaring inferno for 2.5 days. The fires went out on the evening of around 2 o'clock, 2:30. Well, we went out to see if we could find any more bodies. Now, the Nevada was after the Arizona. When she got underway, the first ship to get underway. But when she got up abreast of the California, here come a bunch of Jap planes, and they're going to finish off the California so she'll capsize. She's already flooding the starboard side and took some torpedo and bomb hits. But when the Nevada come aboard, they say, we sink her, we block the harbor. No ship can get out. We had over 100 vessels in there. That's everything, you know, garbage cow up. Well, they decided to beach it because they knew if they sunk it, going to block our harbor. Well, they beached the thing. That saved the California because it gave her enough time to finish flooding her starboard side, and she settled down. J.C. Austin, who lives right up the road here from us, you know, at Troy, this side of Temple, was on the California. So we get out there, and on the third day, we go looking. Well, we went back about where Nevada was that day, and we hadn't seen nobody yet, and we spot a body alongside the bank. When we get up there, this man is fully clothed. He ain't got a scratch on his body. He ain't got a scorched shirt or pants. We felt like he got knocked out somewhere and drowned. He didn't have a scratch on him. And we'd take him over and stack him on 1010 dock. And our state chairman here in Texas is a young man, well, not no young man, but the man by the name of Louis Legesse. He was on the West Virginia. Well, they told us when we was aboard ship, anybody land flat, pick him up, put him in a motor launch, take him over to 1010 dock. They were stacking up these dead bodies, just like you would cordwood. They picked that man up off a dock, take him over. Somebody said he spent almost a half a day or better on top of the pile of all them bodies. Somebody come along, saw his eyelid moving. Saved him. Uh-huh. Got him to the hospital, and now he's state chairman here in Texas. And, you know, it's just things that happen that you don't believe can happen. But that was a miracle for him and also for the other boys. And on the 20th of December, the Pennsylvania was in dry dock. And we got the Maryland forward of us when the Oklahoma capsized. That freed her. She could get out, flood the dock. Pennsylvania could get out. And they bombed the two destroyers in dry dock forward of the Pennsylvania. They eventually took all the parts off them two destroyers, built two new hulls, put them all back in, made two new destroyers. But the Pennsylvania got underway, and they brought underwater demolition. We tied up what they call a quays. They got in there and dynamited that all out, and then they put some good big seagoing tugs. Fish paled us out and got us out from inside to West Virginia. Then three of us got underway on the 20th of December. And them men I was talking about trapped below decks, they when they raised that ship and found those three down there, they estimated they lived to about the 23rd day of December when their water and oxygen supply run out. But we left there heading for the States. So starting with December 1941, we spent Christmas dinner at sea. They even took wrappers off a turkey stamped World War I. I've heard that they've opened some in Iraq stamped number 2. Must have a big freezer somewhere. But anyway, we have a pretty good Christmas dinner. We took a bunch of West Virginia boys back with us. I think we had a few. We had 23 survivors off the Arizona, but I believe they took all them off before we left. And we had a few off the other ships. We took them back. We spent our first Christmas at sea. And starting with Christmas at sea, 41, I spent Christmas at sea, 41, 42, 43, 44. All four Christmases at World War II, I spent aboard ship at sea. I was never ashore on Christmas Day. And when we get back to the States, they're going to give some of us some shore leave, and they dried up there and drilled us. Do not tell anybody when you come here, where you come from, or nothing. We get on the ferry and go to Seattle. There's people already asking you, when did you get in from Pearl Harbor? Somebody has to know a lot you don't know. But we never open our mouths, And I don't know how long I was, I think end of February somewhere, they finally transfer me off. I'm standing fire watch for a welder while they're doing repair work. And they put me on a little mine sweeper. They give me the orders to go to Seattle office building, so-and-so floor, some Navy office, pick up my orders. And before I went into the Navy, Franklin Roosevelt started NYA. It was a job. It would put you National Youth Administration and give you a job, teenage kids, to work 2 weeks out of the month and give you some spending money, help your family. We had a wood shop and a machine shop. So I worked in a wood shop. Future brother-in-law of mine, he helped build them, and he put me in the finishing department. I put the finish on. Well, I go to the office building to get my orders in Seattle, and they got one of these big old mahogany desks. and the knee holes open all the way through. And I'm telling that officer, I said, man, before I got in the Navy, I was building these discs. And I said, we used to put the name on it, put it right underneath the knee hole there, a little aluminum plate. Looked under there, made in Waco, Texas, National Youth Administration, all the way up to Seattle, Washington, boy. So he gave me my orders. I never looked at them, but I was broke. So I said, I got on that ferry. They gave me the ticket to go back. I went aboard ship, and I told the OD when I went aboard ship, I said, I've been transferred officer, but I don't have to pick it up for a couple of days, and I'm broke. He said, go ahead and stay here until you're ready. So I stay aboard ship, and then I go back. It's time for me to find this new ship. And I go down there as a chief in a little office. I showed him my orders. I said, chief, tell me where the ship is, will you? Yeah, down at the end of the pier. Well, I go down there, and I don't walk all the way up where you can see the bow. It turns out to be a little wooden minesweeper, and all it has is YMS-102, stood for Yard Minesweeper. Well, I don't go to that bow. I stop, I go back, and I say, chief, ain't no ship down there. Ain't nothing down there but a fishing boat. He said, son, I'll tell you what you do. You go get all your fishing gear together, and you come back down here and go right on back down there, because that's the boat you going on. I like to choke. I said, that thing ain't much bigger than our motor launches. We had 20-something men in the crew. Our officer was a Lieutenant J.G., was one notch over an ensign. The exec was an ensign. Engineer and officer was an ensign. And out of all of them, only one had ever been to sea before. The skipper had been in the Navy Reserve. I've been to sea before. We had another. His daddy owned a fleet of fishing boats off the Oregon coast, so he'd been to the sea. And the boy that come off a four-stacker destroyer on the East Coast, he become our man for to take care of them diesels, and he knew more than the engineering officer. So I think it was four of us that had been to sea before, and they sent us to Midway Island, and that became our home port. We got there just as they finished the attack. There's still big holes on that island where they had the Battle of Midway. We get over there, and we sweep around the island. What we do, we swept regular, people bringing ships in, bringing supplies in, all that. And then we'd get orders after we started bombing Tokyo. Our army bombers had a place called French Frigate Shoals about halfway between Pearl and Midway. And if they had a tanker come in, we'd get orders. We'd go down there, sweep the channel for him going in, get him in there, wait around outside till he's come out, sweep it, be clear. He come out, go get another load. We go back to Midway Island. And the subs would come in there for R&R every now and then after a 90-day patrol. Didn't even send them into Pearl. And the old Pan Am station down there, they had it open, but it was they used it for ship service and stuff for the subs and for us and the officers on the island. We go down there, drink beer. They give us beer and everything. Give us all them things. It didn't cost us nothing. But we'd stay on that minesweeper. Only had one deck on that minesweeper. And that's one thing I was going to tell earlier about the Robinson boy and the frames. He taught me a valuable lesson. I said, when I get on my next ship, I'm going to memorize them frames. Well, you get on that minesweeper, you ain't got but one deck. You ain't got no frames, you know. And the frames are like the ceiling joists in your house. It's what you taught, but when I got on that carrier, I memorized them frames. I never did forget it. I knew where I was. As long as I knew where that frame was, what part of the ship I was in, I could tell you what frame was on. I made a point to memorize every single one of them. And we did pretty good on the minesweeper. And then they say the medical department come and said, you're going to have to be transferred off. Why? Well, if something medical will happen to y'all or PT boat sailors. So we never did find out why. Said we're going to transfer one officer and a third of the crew. Well, they sent us that time. They sent us back to Pearl Harbor. And I was like going back to the States. And we come in there, and they transferred me and a third of the crew. I went with the first bunch. The skipper will go with the last because Navy, you want to have a change of command anytime they change captains. And they put me on a a ship, had about 10,000 troops on it, brought us back to Maryland Navy Yard, and an officer come out and said, you're going to be here so many days, we're going to get your orders all made up, and said, we'll have your orders ready on Monday so-and-so. Says, come down, pick them up. Until you come down, pick them up, you got shore leave. He said, and every day you late picking up them orders, that's a day off your leave. So we did that, and I found out I come home on a 10-day emergency leave home, and my orders was to go back to Astoria, Oregon, and commissioned christen, rather, a little Jeep aircraft carrier, USS Petroff Bay, CVE-80.
Little bitty things.
We could carry 28 aircraft, yeah. 16 torpedo bombers, 12 fighters. We had the F-4s, but we had some modernized ones called either FU-2s or F-2Us. Still the F-4. It wasn't that much change in it. But 28 of them, torpedo bombers and fighters. And they had several of them. Henry J. Kaiser went to Roosevelt. You need these carriers. How many you need and when you need them. And he said, told him what he wanted, February of 43. Go to February of 44, he built 50 of them CVE aircraft carriers.
I think when the war started, we had 4 aircraft carriers, yeah, which were at sea at the time of Pearl Harbor, fortunately.
See, they wasn't in the harbor.
And the Japanese had, I think, 4. I mean, they lost 3 of them
at Midway Island. Then we went back and finished and got the other one, too.
Well, then, at the end of the war, though, we had 102 carriers.
Oh, God, yeah. We had 50 just as easy.
We took it to them.
See, one of our members here in Waco lives here. He's 97 years old. He don't get out no more. He was on the Nevada at Pearl. They took him off the Nevada and put him on the Lexington. And he sunk again in May of 42. And the Yorktown got hit bad, but they repaired her, yeah, and she gets sunk again in the Battle of Midway. They sunk her again, and when we was at Iwo, they sunk the Bismarck Sea. That was a CVE, cruiser hull type CVE, or cargo ship hull. It wasn't like our CVEs that Kaiser built. Then Saratoga got hit. I think she took torpedoes and bombs both, and she got underway. But we lost the Lexington. Lost the Hornet, lost the Wasp, the Yorktown. You asked me, I'm leaving one off, I think. But when we get on the CVs and when we go over there, we get over, I believe, in February of 44, and we took a couple of shakedown cruises first, you know, and probably went into March before we started into the combat. Tested our squadrons and all that. Then we went into the combat part of it. And at one time, it was, I believe, October of 44, we get our first kamikazes. 24th or 25th of October, I believe, we start getting them suicide planes. And at one stretch, we went 133 consecutive days and nights fighting off kamikazes on them carriers.
They had that many.
Yeah, they had bukus of them, boy. And that's...
Buku is a word meaning many.
Yeah, of all them kamikazes.
Yeah.
Boy, they... Well, when we get up to Okinawa, they threw around 1,800 at us. Kamikazes, our pilots named it the Turkey Shoot. But they sunk a lot. We lost a lot of ships, a lot of them damaged. Because every one of them last ones, the last 14 months of the war in the Pacific created 60% of all our casualties, dead and wounded, in World War II. 60%.
Because of kamikazes?
Yeah. They threw them, boy, they threw them at you. You could hit one, he'd blow apart. Many even made out of cardboard.
Yeah, they were very light.
You could hit him, you had him.
They were fast but light, yeah, and unarmored.
When they started diving, at first, we'd try to shoot at the cockpit before they come with them kamikazes to get that pilot. When he come out with a kamikaze, all you want to do is knock that plane out of there. He going to kill himself. Once he gets an angle on you, he's coming in. Ain't no use to shoot him. He gonna kill himself, knock that plane out. So we got to concentrating on wings. Break that wing off.
How did you, what do you mean by concentrating? You using 50 cal, 20 millimeter?
40, I was on 40 cal, 40 millimeter. 40 millimeter, but on the little Jeep carriers, we only had dual mounts. Big ships had quads.
Did you have a rotary belt on it? I mean, a belt fed?
Yeah.
So you could just keep shooting, huh?
Yeah, we keep shooting. Well, we put clips in. We put clips in on ours, 40. You had a clip, put them in. Had first and second loaders. They completely giving you those and stick them in there. Then you had 20s in between you. I think we had 16 dual mount 40s and 20 millimeters, I believe, and one single mount, open mount, on a fantail, because those ships were built with a square fantail. We had a single mount, 5-inch 38, one open mount, 5-inch 38.
Which means it could...
fight at 5-inch. But the 20's a good gun. There's nothing wrong with a 20, but it didn't have the range of a 40. A 40 reached out there and get them suckers. And when they started diving, I remember my wife told me one morning when I woke up, she said, how come you keep telling time while you're sleeping? I said, I don't know what you're talking about. What do you mean? Well, you up there, you hollering 9 o'clock, 11 o'clock, 10 o'clock.
Uh-huh.
I knew what she talked about then.
You can see.
And I told her, I said, when them planes are diving, oh, yes. Where I was is 9, 10, 11, 12. And I still have the nightmares. Never got over the nightmares. Still have them.
Well, it's intense.
The PTS group leaders will tell you, you don't have to watch a war picture to bring the nightmare on. Channel hop. Is you channel hopping them? Many of you press that button, there's a war picture there, and you're in the next one. Just that image will give you that nightmare. Uh-huh. So you might as well watch the picture.
Well, you, where were you on when the Japanese surrendered? At sea? Or?
Yeah, at sea. Yeah, we was at Okinawa.
How'd you get the news? Through channels?
Oh, yeah.
You didn't listen to radio or something?
Oh, yeah, we got it over there. I was on over there. It was the 14th day of August.
Did you have a radio on board that you could listen to, AM radio?
No, I don't think so. Uh-uh. No, they had to pass
it. So you
had
to, it went down through channels?
Yeah, then. Yeah. The only time they hooked up the bullhorn, they hooked the bullhorn up on the ship and had it attached to all our pilots so we could listen to the pilots during the turkey shooting them down at Okinawa. We could hear the conversations of the pilots. And they'd holler, I scratch one. They'd bring a bunch of slogans out. Everybody dying laughing because they were shooting them suckers down, see?
Uh-huh.
So we was tickled to death. The more they got, better. But when we got that secure, man, that was a blessing there. Boy, I'll never forget that.
So you had a little party right quick?
I woke up 3 days later in sick bay with a blistered throat, drinking pure grain alcohol. Uh-huh.
190 proof.
Yeah, started with grapefruit juice and then went to straight. Well, I didn't get court-martialed or nothing. There was a lot of us down there, and the officers got to hanging a bunch. We had beer called Eric's Beer, brewed in Brooklyn. And they had it stored. They'd give you two bottles every now and then. You stop around out there. The officers put it in a sea bag, and they went back in there to get a CO2 fire extinguisher gun.
Yeah, cool it down.
Yeah, well, when they come back, wasn't nothing to cool. We done stuck at sea bag and cruise with their beer. So, that's what it was, yeah.
Occasionally, you would take the beer up to 20,000 feet for a few minutes and then bring it back down and then everybody get to the beer.
I had an awful sore throat, but I was still smiling. I knew what I drank before, yeah.
So, the general feeling of it's over with, just all over the ship, all over the Navy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And the hangover was there also.
Yeah, nobody can believe it, you know.
Were you parked in port or tied up at port, or what were you doing?
Yeah, we come back. We come back to Pearl, and then we come on into the States.
I mean, but on that day that
it Oh, no, we stayed at sea for a long time before we got back. And then when we got back, of course, it's over. We started making trips, hauling equipment over and hauling equipment back. We brought back troops that was going to get out on the point system, you know.
Uh-huh.
And then they dumped all the equipment. They dumped all that. Deep six to all that, you know.
Yeah,
man, they
things.
Put them old cleat tractors the Marines had. A lot of Jeeps still in Cosmoline.
Just dumped them in the ocean.
Deep six them, yeah. they said it would ruin the economy. Now, allow the islands, Guam and a bunch of them, they had a lot over there. They could keep them. Because a friend of mine kept one. He stayed in the Navy, and he kept his for a long time. But when he got transferred, he had to leave the Jeep there or set it to somebody there on the island because he couldn't take it with him.
Mm-hmm.
So they kept a lot of them, but that was it.
Well, you're just the personal thing about, you know, you had three-day party.
Yeah. Oh, man, yeah. My throat was awful, too. But I could think of the other, and it was made it well.
Uh-huh. Where'd you get that? Where'd you get that juice?
I had a friend that was a pharmacist mate by the name of Black, and we used to get it pretty often when we wanted, when everybody else was in the sack at night. Well, we'd have a little party down there in the galley, and the chief commissary would do it, and all of us, we'd have a few drinks.
Yeah.
Yeah, we could get it. We could get it. We could get it. You find out real quick, yeah. Yeah.
That kind of ameliorates your PTSD.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We had one had a little steel up in the forward hole. He'd make a little. He'd run some off. Everybody drink it. Nickname was Tulagi. Frank Keating was his name, I think. He come off a battleship, New Mexico or Mississippi, and come aboard that carrier. He was a battleship sailor, but he wasn't at Pearl. He when he come aboard the carrier, when we got the crew, we called him Tulagi, and he was a character.
I've heard that we'd push into one of those islands in the South Pacific, and the Marines had pushed the Japanese back, and CBs had come in and established their base, but the one of them, or two of them, or three of them would go run over here in the jungle and set up a steel right quick and start brewing.
My brother, he didn't go back to school. In the next year, he was 16 months younger. He joined the Marine Corps at 16. He was playing trombone. And the other boy, he was my age, and he got out when I did. And he played the trombone. They call Marine musics. They made them musics. And he said he got tired of playing that horn and said they didn't need him. So he got out of that, and they put him in 3rd Marine Infantry Division. But when World War II started, he said he went up to a major and said, "Major, I'm not but 16 years old." Said, "I lied about my age. You're going to have to let me out of here." He said, "When's your birthday?" He said, 15th of December. He said, "Hell, I'll lock you up for 2 weeks, make you legal." So he didn't get out. But he made 4 campaigns, 28 months. The last two, I don't know what the first two were. I don't remember now. Guam and Iwo Jima. He was 3rd Marine Division, 3rd, 4th, and 5th. Hit Iwo, 1st, 2nd, and 6th was at Okinawa, and maybe one or two others in a bunch of Army divisions, I think, at Okinawa. It didn't last as long. We invaded it Easter Sunday, April 1st, 1945. Dawn sure wasn't April Fool. It lasted 3 days.
Yeah.
Iwo was 33 or 4 days. We stayed there on a Jeep carrier. You stay till you get a ceasefire all the way around. Get a secure, then you go to another one. But we Jeep carriers had to stay there and furnish air cover for them till they got it under control. And they get the island under control, we get up and go another place.
How were you resupplied?
Go into Guam or Saipan.
I mean, you had to take your carrier. They didn't have supply ships?
No.
Fuel?
No. Well, we'd get fuel oil at sea from a tanker or from another ship.
Wow.
We used to give it off the carrier to destroyers.
How about your food stuff?
Oh, yeah, you'd have to go in. We went 73 days, run out of sugar, run out of coffee, everything. We didn't have nothing. We done run that coffee through them grounds so much, you didn't even change the color of the water. But we found 70-something days, and we didn't have room. We didn't have refrigeration.
Yeah.
90% of what you eat comes out of a can.
Yeah.
And it's powdered. You know, you got
powdered eggs.
Powdered eggs, and you got powdered milk and dehydrated carrots and peas and all that crap. Yeah, man, that eating was awful. But best one was that chipped beef on toast, but
yeah.
We had a little different name for it.
Yeah, I know.
It was the best meal, yeah.
Something about a shingle.
Yeah, you ain't joking. That's it. Yeah, I tell him manure on a shingle. That don't sound so ugly. But it was,
doesn't do the SOS. Huh?
Yeah. You know, you have to keep. I don't know how you say. You just got to keep up your deal. Don't ever let yourself down.
Well, I was going to ask you about when you were at Pearl Harbor, and you were running 72 hours.
Oh, yeah.
When'd you break for chow? Did you just eat something on a run and go?
Yeah, we
drank a little water somewhere.
We stopped. And
did you have a canteen?
They tried to make sandwiches.
Yeah.
We had a bunch of them off the West Virginia. We had men off the Arizona. Had men off the Oklahoma. Maryland probably had a bunch of them off the Oklahoma because she was inboard of her. And we tried to make sandwiches. That night, they give me a BAR. Never seen one, picked one up in my life. When I picked that thing up, I thought of picking up a cannon.
Yeah.
That's a heavy vehicle.
It sure is.
Yeah. Said, go up to the forecastle. Told me, sit down up there. Don't move around no more than you have to. And if anything moves, shoot it. I said, if it moves, it's shot. Because I'm on the nervous end of that sucker, boy. And I stayed right up at the manger. And they had a semaphore night. We had that little sub we captured, two-man Jap sub.
Yeah.
Eventually, they captured on the other side of Ford Island over where the barracks are for the everybody. That's where they finally got it. But that night, they had that semaphore up there. And that sucker blinked all night long. All night. I don't know what he was saying. But every time that blinked, my heart would repeat it. Boy, I never got started beating. Listen, they finally get it. And when they get that little old sub, that one of them didn't want, he committed Harry Carey. The other one wasn't ready to die. He became our first prisoner of war. And that's where we got him, right there.
Huh?
But that night, we had a lot of that. Boy, lights blinking. Oh, man, let me tell you, anything move, you shot it. You know, the carrier, Enterprise, I believe, sent in 5 or 6 planes because they got underway, I believe, on the 6th of December, around 6 in the afternoon. Well, they get the word of what's happening. They sent in 5 or 6 planes. I forget now because when we went over after 9/11, the keynote speaker was a pilot of one of that bunch. It flew in. We shot all of them down, but him, he managed to land. Shot our own down.
Yeah.
He said, you can't blame him. Said, to this day, I don't blame. And he said, I never forget the names of those. It was a pilot in the carriers. But he said, you couldn't. Everybody was upset. Boy, anything move, you're going to shoot it.
Uh-huh.
And I guarantee you, they made mistakes. If they had brought the third wave, which Nagumo wanted to do, and Yamamoto stopped him, because Yamamoto didn't know where our carriers were. He was scared of them carriers. And he turned old Nagumo down. He wanted to come back, get the Dez base, the fuel depot, and the sub base.
Oh, yeah.
And if they'd have backed it up with troops on that north shore, that's the prettiest shore of the whole island. We couldn't have stopped them. One of our Marines, we just lost him a few months ago, Jack Brown, he breaks a rifle out of a glass cage, breaks it, gets it, but he don't have ammunition for it.
You don't have a firing pin either.
No, don't have nothing. It's just like picking it out and throwing it on the ground. It's all use you're going to get out of it.
Fixed bayonet, let's go.
Yeah, hey, man, you didn't have nothing to fight them back.
Uh-huh. That's your frustration level.
Yeah, and that's another thing that they did that was right. They did not let us go ashore, and thank God we didn't, because if you'd have had slant eyes when we went ashore,
yeah,
we'd have killed innocent people. You know what I mean? They wasn't Japs. And if they were Japs, they was American Japs. We'd have killed a lot of innocent people if they'd let us went ashore.
Your fury.
Yeah, we was bitter.
And
oh, man, bitter. And it, Doris Miller, the Waco boy, when that bomb of mine blew his captain in two, that's the one he was supposed to drug him down to safety. And he come up and got on that machine gun up there. He was a steward's mate downstairs or something. Huh. There, yeah.
So you're downstairs and you hear all this boom.
Yeah, I would.
And you're going, what's this noise?
Yeah, exactly. You don't know, but it's awful loud when it started. It didn't take you long to find out, boy. They threw it at us.
So you went from 0 to 120 in just two steps.
Oh,
huh?
Yeah. And they only lost 29 aircraft, and they threw over 350 at us. lost 29. I think it's 15 torpedo bombers.
8%.
Yeah. 9 fighters and 5 dive bombers, I think. It's 29. That's all they lost.
Huh. Your ability to recall the facts is amazing.
But
there's very few people that have been here that have your...
Well, that's the one thing I try to tell the teachers and the kids today. And with God as my witness, I've already read my paper this morning. I've read the editorial page. And right now, I can't tell you what I read. I can't remember it.
Some of it's not that important.
It's embarrassing.
Well, no, it's entertainment for the moment.
Yeah, but it's, man, when you can't think. Just like your names. I'll forget that name just like that. I even think what mine is. I was trying to think something this morning and couldn't think of it. But I can drink a lot of coffee. But I tell everybody what happened in that war and on that day is tattooed on your soul. There's no way I can forget that. I wish to God I could, but you can't.
Well, you were singularly involved in something that no one else will be involved in.
Yeah.
In our generation. Right now, if it just looks bad, we send up everything. We got stuff armed and cocked. You know, and it's just a matter of the right code, the right button.
And then, you know, they got 1,177 supposed to be entombed on Arizona, but they took out over 200 bodies off of it and put them in that Punch Bowl Cemetery over a beautiful memorial cemetery, put them over there. People ask you, why didn't you get the rest off? They don't stop and think. When that bomb hit that magazine, them poor souls never knew they left this earth. They're dust. Mm-hmm. They were disintegrated just like that. That's the reason you'll never get them off. Stop and think about it. You hit that magazine, you gone. You don't even know you left this world.
Pretty high-powered stuff. To be able to throw a 16-inch or 14-inch, 28, 30 miles at a time.
Yeah. You had Admiral Kidd on that
with
Arizona.
2,000-pound HE at the end of it. Mm-hmm. That takes a lot of explosive power to project that.
Oh, man, yeah, yeah. We lost a lot.
Oh,
no, we're not out of time.
You're out of time. I'm out of time. I just wanted to ask you, just for the record, how old were you on December 7th?
I just turned 18 in August. I was about 4 months into 18.
You could register to vote today.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
What?
Thank you so much.